Hello friends, welcome to Advanced Studio Classroom. I'm Campbell and it is great to have you here with us today. Today we are going to be studying day two of our entertainment article for the month of November. Now for those of you who weren't with us yesterday, the article that we're discussing is about a famous filmmaker named Steven Spielberg. And many of you might know Steven or have heard of Steven Spielberg. He has directed big major films such as E.T., Indiana Jones, Schindler's List, various well-known films, and he's produced a lot of films as well. So he is definitely a big name in the Hollywood filmmaking industry. But what we learned about yesterday is that even though he is an expert and he is a veteran in this field, he still feels like a rookie. He still feels like he is still learning the ropes in some ways. All right. Well, we have a lot to talk about today, but before we get into our article, let me welcome our friends here. We have Brendan here again with us, our film expert. How are you today, Brendan?
I am doing well. Thanks for having me back.
Now, you had some really good insight yesterday, and I look forward to hearing what you have to share today.
Well, thank you for having me back, and I love film, so this is really fun for me.
Yeah. All right, and we also have Pauline here. How are you today, Pauline?
Doing great. I always love being here, getting to talk about whatever our articles are on. I'm learning a lot this time around with these articles on Spielberg.
I'm sure. Well, speaking of which, can you guys each share one thing that that stood out to you about yesterday's lesson?
Well, I really liked the personal note of getting to know Spielberg a little bit more, just as a human being.
Sure.
I love that the reason that he picked the BFG as his next film was because he had read that book to his children several times even. And I just particularly was enchanted by the idea of this big-time movie producer, obviously really big into film and movies, who's still willing to pick up a book, a paper book, and sit down and read to his kids. That he's not just putting them in front of the TV and saying, watch the movie of these things. Yeah. But I don't know, there's still that parenting connectedness with the written word. It just made me all the more attracted to him as a movie producer.
Yeah, sure. It definitely gives him more of a human, you know, it makes him more human, right? And a lot of times these big celebrities, we kind of forget that they're people too. And so this gives more of a heartwarming touch to this director that we know so much about. What about you, Brendan?
I actually have something very similar to yours, that sort of human side to him. The fact that he now is really thinking about the message that he's portraying.
Yeah.
As you mentioned yesterday, that you like Steven Spielberg's work because the whole package is really good. The message that he is showing in his film is a positive one. And that's something that I agree with. You know, most, if not all, of his characters are genuinely good people who want to do something good.
Right.
You know, and that is something that he sort of, I think, was unconsciously doing, you know, trying to do these films that have good characters with a good message. But now the fact that he's actually thinking about it, I think, was just really cool. And I think it's just really good to see that even he is growing. You know, this filmmaker that, like you say, we put on a pedestal and forget he's human.
Right.
Well, he is very much human, and he is learning and growing, just like the rest of us.
Yeah. I think, you know, as we were talking about yesterday, at the beginning of his career, he didn't realize the impact that his films would have, you know. But now he's realizing that as he puts these things into the world, that whether he intends to or not, he is delivering a specific message. And so he's being more conscious, and he's not necessarily trying to preach, or as we said yesterday, he's not trying to be rabbinical. He's not trying to necessarily teach or kind of convince you of a particular point of view, but he is realizing that whatever he does create does say something. And so he's being very careful about what he says. And I think one thing I enjoyed about learning about yesterday was that another reason he chose to do the BFG, again, BFG stands for Big Friendly Giant. The reason he chose to do this film is because he just enjoys being imaginative and creative and having that fantasy world rather than being kind of tied down to history, even though he does that really well, right? I mean, you know, he did Schindler's List, and he did Bridge of Spies, Lincoln, Warhorse, all of these, and Saving Private Ryan. Right?
Did he do that? Yes, he did.
So a lot of movies that were tied in history, right? And so, you know, he's kind of had a lot of boundaries placed on him. But when he does more of these fantasy-type films, he gets to allow his imagination to run wild. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, let's get into our article for today. Our article starts on page 39 at the right-hand corner there. So please join us on your mobile device or in your magazine, and we're going to start where it says another partnership.
Another partnership. The BFG also provided a chance for Spielberg to work again with British actor Mark Rylance, who took the supporting actor Oscar for his role opposite Tom Hanks in Bridge of Spies. Aided by a remarkably sophisticated use of performance capture technology, the actor gives such a sublime performance as the mumbling, grumbling, eccentric tower of bewildered immensity that the film is virtually impossible to imagine without him.
All right, so we are talking about another one of Spielberg's partnerships. Now, this is something that a lot of directors do, right? They find an actor that they work well with, and then, you know, they work on several projects with them. Now, who are we talking about here that Spielberg has developed a new partnership with?
A British actor named Mark Rylance, who took the supporting actor Oscar for his role opposite Tom Hanks in Bridge of Spies.
Right. So, Bridge of Spies is a Steven Spielberg film, one of the films that he's directed. And Tom Hanks, again, is a person that's often collaborated with Steven Spielberg, right? He was in Catch Me If You Can and several other films. He was in Saving Private Ryan as well. So, Tom Hanks is another example of a partnership that Steven Spielberg has often had. And now this other actor named Mark Rylance worked with him on Bridge of Spies, which again was a historical film, or a film based on historical events.
Yes.
And now they're working together on this more of a fantasy type film. And we see a picture of Rylance on page 38 there, in the middle of the page, and also the character that Rylance played on the bottom of page 39. So you kind of get to compare the two, right? And what's interesting is that in BFG, Mark wasn't actually filmed directly, in a way. Right? We talk about this idea of performance capture technology. Can you explain a little bit more about that?
So, performance capture technology is the next step after motion capture technology.
Mm-hmm.
The way that motion capture technology works is you have a number of sensors put around on the joints and at various parts of the body, and then you set up a bunch of cameras to capture those sensors. That information from the cameras is sent to a computer that then is able to take that information and put it into a 3D model that will perfectly replicate the motion of the actor.
Mm-hmm.
Performance capture technology is the same concept except applied specifically to the face.
Right.
Because while motion capture technology can get big motions of an entire body, you don't get the subtleties of a human face.
Mm-hmm.
And so what they do is they stick a camera right in front of your face,
right,
pointed at you, and have all these dots on your face at certain points, and the camera picks up those dots,
right,
and they apply that to a 3D computer-generated model,
mm-hmm,
to replicate a face a lot quicker and a lot more accurately than perhaps an animator would do after 3 hours of work,
mm-hmm,
for 3 seconds, mm-hmm, of animation.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I have to say, that makes me even more impressed with that actor, Mark Rylance, that he could be providing what I assume is going to be, I haven't seen it yet, but a very nuanced, emotional, acting performance,
right,
when he's got such a strange experience happening in reality, if he's got some some camera right on his face like that, and all these dots and stuff. You know, it's amazing that he can go past that and give a performance that can transcend that, and others can watch and never imagine that that's what the conditions that was filmed under.
Right. Yeah, totally. And I mean, this is not new technology necessarily. It's been used in a lot of films, right? It was used in Lord of the Rings with Gollum, and it was used in Avatar, and that's kind of one of the bigger films that has used this motion capture technology. But as with anything, this technology has become more sophisticated and more advanced, and it's kind of being able to capture more of the subtleties of the facial expression. And so the difference here is, you know, rather than putting on prosthetics and makeup and stuff and actually capturing the actual actor, you know, it's kind of computer generated, and so it's what we see on the screen is computer generated. It's animation, but it's kind of combined with the actual performance and the actual facial expressions of the actor. And so again, going back to the pictures here, you see the actual actor Rylance on page 38, you see the character on page 39, and so you see that there are certain features that are similar, right, and that they, you know, you can obviously tell it is that actor, but there are different features and different animation that's done to make him kind of look older and more of a fantasy type, fantasy-like creature, more of the giant rather than the actual actor himself. So it's interesting, and as Pauline was saying earlier, this actor gives such a sublime performance as the mumbling, grumbling, eccentric tower of bewildered immensity. So even though he's not necessarily maybe even wearing the costume and the makeup, right? But he's still able to give that performance.
Yes, even through a computer, which a lot of people were, you know, skeptical that such a thing could actually work.
Right.
The Lord of the Rings actually didn't have the facial performance capture.
Right.
Now, but for The Hobbit, they did. And so that was a huge jump, and it made the production staff's life a whole lot easier with it, because they didn't have to animate the face for every single scene.
Yeah. And I think the benefit of that is because, you know, our human eyes, we can detect such subtlety. And when something's a little off and it doesn't feel quite right, we kind of can reject it, you know. So being able to capture the subtlety of the facial movement, I think it really helps to bring, make it more genuine, make it feel more real, right? And I think it takes a special skill to be able to act through that, because it really takes a lot of imagination to kind of figure out, okay, well, what's going on? I'm not actually seeing the environment around me, but in my head, you know, and he's able to deliver such a great performance despite not having the crutch of the actual environment or the costume with him.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's pretty cool. I think this is really bringing movies to the next level. And I think what's interesting that I read online is that this technology, you know, in essence, you can kind of take this actor's performance, and even if he's passed on, right, you can actually use this for another film later on, which is kind of trippy to think about, you know, living beyond yourself, right, and you actually being able to be in another movie that you weren't actually filming for, right? So that's pretty cool. Okay, and I like the word here, this description of him being a mumbling, grumbling, eccentric tower of bewildered immensity. Now, this word immensity, again, just the idea that the extreme large size of something. So he is a giant, and he's kind of like mumbling, grumbling, just kind of, you know. Yeah, so it's an interesting character here. All right, let's see what actors have taught Spielberg. Please join us. Turn the page to page 40, and let's continue our article.
What actors have taught Spielberg? Even though you're not supposed to be able to learn past 65, Spielberg says, I learned things I wish I'd learned 30 years ago. Along with Daniel Day-Lewis and Tom Hanks, Rylance taught me patience to allow the actor time to find their moment. Real directing is about creating an environment where actors feel safe to fail. If they can't be allowed to fail publicly, there's nothing to be dared. Rylance will also have a key role in Spielberg's next film, Ready Player One, a project that also speaks to the kind of work the director wants to be doing. Based on the 2011 science fiction novel by Ernest Cline, it will be, Spielberg says, a sprawling adventure movie that will be extremely compelling for a young audience. But it also has an extremely strong message about getting lost in cyberspace. When you stay hidden behind your own avatar, when you are in control of that world, how much of the real world do you forfeit? Even with kids today, I've watched eye contact become a social liability.
So even though Spielberg is 69 now, he says that he's still continuing to learn new things, and he's learning things that he wish he'd learned 30 years ago. Now, we talked earlier about some of the partnerships that he's had. We already mentioned Tom Hanks, and we talked a little bit about Rylance, and here we see another actor here, Daniel Day-Lewis, and he was the actor that was in Lincoln, right, with Spielberg, and these actors taught him something. What did they teach him?
Well, they taught him patience to allow the actor time to find their moment. So basically, and he expands on this in the next paragraph, real directing is about creating an environment where the actors feel safe to fail. This allows the actor to try things, and frankly, it's a very good thing for all parties to collaborate together.
Sure. Yeah. And I mean, I'm an actor, so I know that process of finding that character, and you're basically putting on someone else's personality, right, when you're portraying this character. So it's not something that comes natural to you. So you kind of have to play around with it and see how you can say different things and, you know, try on different accents and different mannerisms and try to see what works and what doesn't work. And if you don't have that kind of environment where you can play, it can really stifle the creativity, right? It can really keep you from finding that true, honest performance. And I think I love what he does, you know, because as a director, it can be easily just, well, this is my show, you know, and you just perform, you just do it right, you know, do it the way I told you to do. But he actually allows them that time to explore.
Or I like, too, that we've talked about earlier, he's a big name. Ultimately, he's got a big name at stake on every movie that goes out, and a big part of that is going to be how the actors play the parts that he's put together for this movie.
Right.
So it's really nice to hear, though, that he doesn't take that so seriously that then he is pushing that kind of expectation and, I don't know, just fear of failure on the actors that he's choosing to work with.
Yeah.
You know, that it's not such an ego thing that he can't say, go for it, do your best.
Mm-hmm.
There's a very fine line between micromanaging everything as a director, because as a director, it is your vision and it is your job to put your vision into film.
Yeah.
But there's a fine line between micromanaging everything that happens and keeping that vision and trying to get that vision understood and allowing the actors so much freedom that your vision suddenly gets compromised.
Yeah.
And so it's very good that he allows them room to play, and it sounds like he's found like that perfect opportunity where he allows them to play and allows their ideas and is able to not necessarily adjust his vision too much, but make enough changes that he's still sort of got the reins, but the horses feel like they're really, you know, helping choose what direction they get to go.
Right. Yeah. And I think it's great that he gives them that environment to explore and to quote unquote fail, even though there's really no failing, right? It's just about, okay, well, that kind of works, that doesn't work, and then you kind of adjust as you go. And then next we talk about another film that he's doing with Rylance, and this one is called Ready Player One. And it's based on a 2011 science fiction novel. And basically the story here is that it's the future and, you know, there's this kind of game that people are playing. And the game inventor has passed on and has left kind of a
he kind of left this prize for people to discover, right? Mm-hmm. And I'll leave you guys to kind of go and find the details of that online. But it's an adventure film, and it's a science fiction film, and it explores some interesting themes, right? And this interesting message about getting lost in cyberspace. And on the right-hand column here, it says, when you stay hidden behind your own avatar, when you are in control of that world, how much of the real world do you forfeit? Now, what is he talking about here?
I took it as combined with that last sentence where he said, I've watched eye contact become a social liability. I took it as a comment maybe on how much time we in our society spend looking at our electronic devices, our phones,
right,
playing games,
yeah,
in our kind of own little cyber world,
right,
not making eye contact or talking to and connecting with the people right next to us. So that's kind of how I took it.
And I sort of took it a little bit differently as somebody who does a lot of online gaming, hiding behind your own avatar. I know how nice it is to be in a world where you have complete control of your character and who you interact with and everything like that. You can, you know, there's almost like you feel more comfortable in a digital world and a digital game where, you know, you have control over so many of the variables,
right,
that when you get into the real world where you don't necessarily have as much control, suddenly, you know, you don't want to interact with other people because it's so risky. You don't have control. Something might go wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think it's going to be an interesting film to look at as well and to see, you know, to get people to think, well, you know, am I spending too much time in this virtual world that I'm losing contact with reality and the real world? All right, well, let's finish our article. We're going to be talking about what motivates Spielberg. So please join us at the right-hand column of page 40.
What motivates him? Finally, the criteria Spielberg uses for projects he goes ahead with are, what will excite me the most? What will make me look forward to waking up in the morning? Certain stories I'm attracted to, I don't know how to tell or how to walk away from, which is why it sometimes takes me 10, 12 years to make projects after they're announced. But with every movie I make, I do it because I have to get it out of my system or I can't sleep.
So what motivates Spielberg? Well, as someone who is such a big name in the industry, he actually has control and he gets to pick the projects that he works on. You know, for a lot of people starting out in the industry, they might not have that luxury. You know, they just kind of have to take what comes along, right? But because he is such a veteran, he gets to choose what he works on, and no one dictates to him what he needs to work on. So he kind of has a lot of options. And I don't know about you, but when I have a lot of options, I sometimes don't know what to pick, right? But he has certain criteria. What are some of his criteria that he uses?
He uses the criteria, what will excite me the most and what makes me look forward to waking up in the morning, which I think that's awesome because it sort of shows a certain, I don't want to say childlikeness, but this sort of something that I can appreciate about being excited about a project,
sure,
and it's something you really enjoy and you look forward to, you know, waking up in the morning,
right,
you know, because you know that it's like, oh, we're going to be able to work on it again, and that, like, excitement on it is just, I think it's really cool.
Yeah, definitely. I think, like he said, it takes him several years to complete a project, so if he's not excited about it, it's going to be drudgery. So if he's got the power to choose, then definitely, you know, you want to choose something that you're excited about, right? And he says something else here. He says certain stories he's attracted to, he doesn't know how to tell or how to walk away from, and that's why it takes him sometimes 10 to 12 years to make projects after they're announced. But with every movie he makes, why does he do it?
He says he has to get it out of his system or he can't sleep.
Yeah.
So it's just something that's so much a part of him that unless he actually does the movie, he says it's just there. It's something that's going to keep him up at night. He just can't stop thinking about this particular film that he wants to create, which sounds like he's pretty passionate about this work.
Yeah, definitely. So there are certain stories that he has to tell. He just feels like if he doesn't tell it, then he's not getting his job done. And like we said, he can't sleep. Well, Spielberg is really, really inspirational. And I mean, I really appreciated him before, but I think after going through these 2 days and reading more about him, I really respect him even more than I did before.
Yeah, I think he's a very respectable man, not just for the work he does and, you know, what he creates, but also as a human being. He just seems like a genuinely, genuine person.
Yeah.
You know, he has kids that he loves. He's got, he's being very conscientious about the films he makes, and he seems a lot more human now after reading this, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, he is one of those people that has affected the whole industry, right? He's made so many iconic films and so many iconic characters, right? And so a lot of, I think, you know, he's one of those names that you just, when you think of Hollywood, when you think of cinema and film, you think of Spielberg. And so he is huge, and he's had such a huge influence, and I think it's great that he takes his craft so seriously, but at the same time not so seriously. You know, that he recognizes the weightiness of his job as a director and as a producer, but at the same time he doesn't think so highly of himself that he kind of, like Brandon was saying, micromanages everything, and he doesn't give anybody else room to be creative. So I think that takes a really big man, and it takes a lot of maturity. So it was really interesting to learn more about Spielberg. We hope that you enjoyed learning about him, and maybe you've been inspired to check out some of his movies, maybe some of the earlier ones like E.T. or Indiana Jones, or some of his newer ones like this Ready Player One or The BFG. Well, let us know what you thought about Spielberg and this article. What are some of your favorite Spielberg films? Tell us. We'd love to hear from you. As always, remember to check out our QR code, and we hope that you'll come back again for another lesson next time. Thanks, friends. Take care, everyone. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Goodbye. Bye.